I want to talk today about James Naylor. Some of you are studying him, and I forget now whether one of the chapters in the reading will deal with him, but in spite of that, I want to talk about him a little. Because he raises some very interesting questions about Quakerism in the early days. These people don't always spell their names the same way. One of the hazards of trying to identify people is to tell what the other spelling is. Then you find them. Six years older than Fox, as you see. A North Country man. My arithmetic isn't right. That's 6 years. Chuck Fox was born in 24. And he illustrates some quite important features of the Quaker movement in the earliest days. Been a good deal written about him, but I don't think the last words have yet been said about him. I'm not saying them today either, but maybe I will read them on or after the 11th of March. At any rate, he's worth our looking at. He spent a number of years in the Parliamentary Army, and you would expect that the Quakers who had been in the Civil War would mostly have been on the parliamentary side, not the royal side, wouldn't you? I mean, from their social status. He had risen to be quartermaster in one of the regiments, and he had become, however, a pacifist before he became a friend. He met Fox pretty early. If you remember the rather interesting scene we had of Margaret Fell and her husband and the local priest and George Fox, you may remember that James Naylor happened to be on hand too. And it was helpful to Fox on his first meeting with the judge to have such an attractive associate with him, as James Naylor certainly was. He had been an associate of Fox in prison on one occasion, and then had come among the earliest to preach in London. And there he met with very great success. Two other men began the campaign in London of friends, two others of these early ministers, but he came and took it over. And when they got in prison, he was the only man in charge, and that was a pretty big problem for him. They had big meetings, and he was a hard-pressed, working hard, preaching frequently in these meetings and meeting people, especially people of high social class. A number of the noble women heard him gladly and entertained him, and he saw quite a lot of people of influence in London and helped build up quite a large following of friends in London. George Fox was in prison down in Cornwall, the very corner of England, and Naylor went down on one occasion to see him, and was arrested like nearly everybody else. People flocked down to Cornwall. And on their way through the next province, Devonshire, Naylor was arrested and sent to prison in Exeter. Exeter and Launceston are two little ports down there in Jason counties in the southeast corner southwest corner of England. He wanted to see Fox, as everybody else did, renew their acquaintance, and was like most of the other visitors to Fox, he was deflected. He was picked up as a vagabond and sent to jail at Exeter Jail. Well, now, before he'd gone down there, it was pretty evident that during his time in London, a group of admirers of Naylor had become a little jealous of Fox. As often happens, the admirers of people do more harm than the people do to one another. And the admirers of Naylor became a pretty evil influence upon him. They accepted the current Quaker view that there was something Christ-like in, potentially, in any person, something good, and that insofar as anybody exemplified, as men like Naylor and Fox did, this spirit of Christ, purity of life, which the Quakers believed could be obtained, it is quite evident that when this was done, their admirers would say some things to them or about them that would look rather blasphemous. Matter of fact, a good many of the Swarthmore letters addressed to Margaret Fell, the people writing to her, or people writing to George Fox, and these letters also got into the same collection, begin with such saying that, "Thou art the fairest of 10,000. Well, that's all right when it's a love song in the book of Canticles in the Old Testament. Of course, the Christians applied it to Christ. And then when a Quaker writes to another Quaker, something like that, the impression is given that they are ascribing to the mere human being some of the qualities of Christ. Well, these women, there were one or two men among them, but the most vigorous of Naylor's admirers were two women. Should I put their names on the board? Yeah, not always this spelling. These are, the women were all married women, and their husbands sometimes trailed around with them. These women were among the women who in London already, before either Fox or Naylor had gotten down to Southeast England and were imprisoned there, had shown to sober friends, other friends, that they were rather excessive in their praise of Naylor, and also were trying to estrange Naylor from Fox. Obviously, there was no, in the early Quakerism, there was nothing but just personal friendship and the similarity of life and ideas to bring to keep these people together. So it was rather a subtle undermining of the friendship between these two persons. If you had asked anybody in 1656 who were the outstanding Quakers, the answer would have been James Naylor and George Fox, perhaps in that order. One man who went crazy in 1658 was in jail, and he reported as saying, "Oh, brave James Naylor, oh, brave George Fox, oh, brave William Coatsworth," that was his name. "Nobody has done anything before as great as we have done." Happily, he died in 3 days after this. I mentioned it to show merely how Naylor and Fox were bracketed in the regard of an enthusiastic and over-enthusiastic Quaker way up in Newcastle in Northumberland. Well, when Martha Simons heard that her pet James Naylor had gotten imprisoned down at Exeter, she went down to wait upon him, and fortunately on the way she stopped in to see the local governor, and his wife was very sick, and she offered her services to nurse this woman, and made herself so welcome. This was an area where this particular insanity of hers wouldn't enter in, that she made herself so welcome that she secured an order from the provincial governor, whose wife she had nursed back to health, that all the prisoners in Exeter should be released. So she and her husband took this order down to Exeter, and down to Launceston, where Fox was, and got Fox and the others out of prison. Fox, on his way back into central England, stopped at Exeter to see James Naylor. They had an interview, and I think maybe Fox behaved worse than Naylor. At any rate, the situation was such that there was no reconciliation. Fox rebuked Naylor for the extravagances which he allowed these women to play, and Naylor, I think, humbly tried to reconcile Fox, but didn't succeed. At any rate, this in itself was a serious breach in the Society of Friends. I don't think I need be hard on Fox, but I can be easy on Naylor, if you understand. First place, he was under terrific strain. He had entered into a long fast, had eaten no solid food for a long time, and he was tormented by this flock of admirers who followed him wherever he went. When he visited in their house, they wouldn't leave to give him any leisure, and he didn't have much time to recover his good judgment.